Intrepid Radio, this is Control. We are go for an on-air check.
Control, Intrepid. We copy an on-air check.
Intrepid, this is Control. You are go for Intrepid Radio. Cue music and cue talent. Intrepid, you are live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Intrepid Radio, you are live and the clock is running. You are listening to Intrepid Radio, where we spotlight innovators defining the new rules of marketing, business, politics, and life. And now, here's your host, Todd Schnick.
Good morning and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined today by a lady who I am really looking forward to getting to know better and hearing more about her new book. Say hello to Sarah Robinson, who's a business strategist. Good morning, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure, Sarah. I'm really grateful to Jenny Schmidt for getting you and I connected, and I'm just sorry that we didn't get a chance to get you into my studio while you were here in Atlanta, but thank you for making the time to join me today.
Sure. Well, I plan on being back in Atlanta very soon, so maybe you and I can grab a cup of coffee then.
Well, let's absolutely do that. Sarah, before we get into it, we're here today to talk about your new book, but before we do that, take a sec and tell us a little bit about you and your background.
I would love to do that. I am a business strategist. I work with companies large and small. I help them with their social media strategy. I help them build remarkable online and offline presence for their brand. And I help them build a strong community of raving fans around their business, around their brand, and around their message. So that's what I do.
Outstanding. Well, the new book is called Fierce Loyalty: Unlocking the DNA of Wildly Successful Communities. Sarah, I just have to ask, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of books about building community and all that. Why did you need to write this book?
Because when I was working with my clients, one of the first things I have always done is I sit down and say, okay, we need to build a community of raving fans around your brand. What assets do you have? How do we need to go about doing this? And I would get answers like, well, we just need to do what XYZ's company is doing. We just need to imitate that completely, and then we'll have their success. Or we just need to hire a really great community manager. Or, you know, the stars will kind of align, and it'll either happen or it doesn't. So I went looking for a model, like a literally this is how you do it model that I could show my clients and say, okay, here it is. Here's how it works. And there wasn't one. A lot of the books that are out there on community building are theoretical. They're great books, don't get me wrong, but they're very theoretical. They're not built for very fast implementation, which is the whole idea behind Fierce Loyalty. I lay out the DNA, the common DNA that I discovered shared by every successful community I could find. And then I illustrate that DNA with all kinds of case studies, companies large and small, nonprofits, for-profits, you know, everything I could think of to illustrate that DNA. And then I walk the reader through exactly what they need to do to implement that model. It is replicatable. It is duplicatable. People have used it, are using it. And I just didn't find a book like that out there. Believe me, if that book had existed, I would have been thrilled because then I wouldn't have had to do this.
Right.
But there just wasn't one. So I wrote it.
Well, good for you. Sarah, let me push back in a way here. I'm not challenging your premise that there ought to be a model on how to build a community. Obviously, there's a framework that has worked for a lot of organizations to build this network of raving fans. But I worry that there are some organizations that say, oh, there's just a system that I can just tap into and it'll be done. Doesn't it require a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of personal interaction with these fans to get them bought into the community? I mean, talk about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's at the heart of the model. I mean, when I start the book, I'm like, if you think this is a quick fix, you can close the book right now, because it's not. It requires a huge commitment, and you have to decide now whether you're willing to make that commitment, because you will have to do a lot of work. You pour in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. You will be doing 98.9% of the work for a good chunk of the time before your community comes along and gets to where you want it to be. And the very heart of the model is that very thing. You have to engage. And you can't just, you know, oh, I'm on social media, I'm friendly, I'm engaging. I'm like, no, no, no. You have to work at it, and you have to create an environment that really fosters the kind of community, you know, the legendary communities. One of the case studies that I use again and again is Harley Davidson. They didn't just implement something and wake up with that community, right? Here, we'll just rubber stamp this and we'll have this raving community of fans.
Right.
They work at it. They work at it all the time. It does. It requires a lot of work and a huge commitment.
But it never ends. See, that's what that's what frustrates me about some VP of marketing somewhere says, okay, the boss says I need to implement a social media strategy, which then will help me build a community, which then I can check that off my list and move on to the next, project. Harley Davidson, to use your example, is consistently working at that, and more importantly, the raving fans are extending that community and contributing to that. And you have to foster an environment where your fans can continue the story, right?
Exactly. And that's what I talk about. One of the returns on investment, people are like, well, why do I need to go to the trouble to do this? Sounds like a lot of work. Why do I even want to do that? I'm like, because if you do the work and you do it well, you will have a community that can then multiply your efforts. And here's the thing. You and I both know that in this day and age, we don't really pay attention to what companies say about themselves, their ad messages, all of that. We pay attention to what our friends say about a company. And that's what a fiercely loyal community will do. Built correctly, that's exactly what they will do for you. They will go out and be your brokers. And because they love you, not because you're paying them to, not because they get something, but because you are an integral part of who they are and how they define themselves, and they cannot wait to tell everybody about you. And that kind of messaging, no amount of money on the planet Earth can buy it.
Talk about outsourcing community building. Is that even really possible? I mean, can you hire an agency or bring on an intern and say, all right, go build a community? Talk about that. I mean, is there a way to do that?
Have you been talking to my clients, Todd?
Oh, you and I.
That's what I get. Oh, my VP wants me to build a community. That's why I want one. Well, who's going to run your community? The intern, really?
Really? Talk about that, though. I mean, how do you overcome that challenge?
Well, here's what I say.
Or can you?
Yes, you can. Because here's what I say when I'm presented with those kinds of arguments, I will say, this is the most important marketing effort you're going to put on the table this year. Do you want to entrust your most important, potentially most lucrative marketing strategy to an intern?
And that's usually the sound you get is the silence.
Yeah, they're like, but they know the most about social media. All right, well, the intern can help with that and probably can teach some of your
I call bunk on that. The intern may be familiar with Facebook and Twitter, but I don't know they know about building community.
No. But I'm just saying they know how to use social media.
Right, right, right.
And so they can probably be very helpful getting some, you know, a team. But I say a community requires a team, and it's got to have buy-in from all departments, because everybody needs to know what's going on Twitter, on Facebook. It's got to have buy-in from all departments. There's got to be a quarterback. The quarterback does not need to be the intern, but there's got to be a quarterback who's leading the team. But yeah, entrusting the most significant marketing effort you're going to make for the next 12 months to an intern or to an outsourced company, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
Sarah, I have two businesses, and one of them, our target market is manufacturing, industrial distribution, you know, the engineering shops that, that support and service those first two. Obviously, that space, no surprise to you, is very old school.
And my husband's in that space, so I totally get it.
Right. So when I go to them and say, hey, we need to, and what we do for our clients is frankly to work to lurch them into the modern world. But when I tell them I define it differently, but what I'm in essence saying is we have to build a community. They say, oh, that's never worked for us. Haven't we always built communities of raving fans? The difference now is that it's done. There's new tools. There's new digital tools that make it different. And how you do it. But we've always done that, right?
Some companies have. Smart companies have always had communities. I mean, you think about, I mean, all the way, the way our grandparents did business. There wasn't any social media. There wasn't any Facebook or Yelp to make recommendations.
Right.
You know, they did business with the butcher they've been doing business with their whole lives and that they probably went to school with. And I mean, and they told their friends, and the butcher wouldn't dare give a bad piece of meat because not only would my grandmother complain, she'd call all her friends and say, you're not going to believe what he did. They wouldn't dream of doing that. So we've always had that kind of community. If we've done well, a lot of companies have said, not going to do that. I'm just going to push marketing messages and see what happens.
I'm going to cold call.
Yeah, I'm just going to spend my life cold calling. Every month, I'm going to beat the bushes for new customers.
And then wonder why I need to drink heavily at the end of the month.
Exactly. Exactly. One of the things that a fiercely loyal community will do for you is you don't have to do that. You have much higher client customer retention and, you know, much lower order fall off with a fiercely loyal community.
That is a key point. So audience, pay attention to that. Let me use it as a segue into what my next question was, is think about an organization, Sarah, that is maybe has a traditional structure. So there's there's C-levels and there's a VP of sales and or a VP of marketing, and then there's a sales force. So it's a team of people that are frankly are probably tasked to go knock on doors and generate opportunity. Mm-hmm. How do you structure this model of building a community, why it's relevant to a traditional sales force? Because they can tap into that too, can they not?
Absolutely. To me, I've been in sales. I've sold advertising. I've sold all kinds of stuff. And if you said to me, okay, if you will use this approach, you will not be cold calling on the first of next month, the first through the 29th of next month.
Right. Exactly.
You will not have to beat the bushes, or if you do, you don't have to do it. You know, it will be 20% of what you do, not 80% of what you do. I'd be all over it. And that's what, if you can develop a fiercely loyal community of clients, customers who trust you, who are proud to be your customer, who are passionate about the fact that they're, you know, they work with you, you won't have to do that. I mean, you've done sales, you know that. I mean, would you be willing to give up beating the bushes for the first 28 days of the month?
My answer is yes, but Sarah, the pushback I always get is, oh, but Todd, don't be silly. That works for B2C. How do you overcome that?
Well, it does work for B2C, but it also works for B2B. I know companies that Life is Good is a great example. Under Armour is a great example of B2B. They do both do some B2C, but they also do B2B. Their distributors are wildly crazy about their company, because of the way they treat them and because they've built a community out of their retailers and their distributors. The distributors talk to each other. The retailers know each other. They have events for their distributors and retailers. And so they develop this community among themselves, and that just feeds their loyalty.
Yeah. So you mentioned in my space, you mentioned the key word distributors, because when I talk to this – when I talk about building a community to my manufacturing clients, they don't get it because they're thinking of the end user. when in fact what they ought to be building is this tight-knit community and building raving fans in the distributor sector.
Yeah.
I mean, that's because you're always battling for mindshare.
If
you're a distributor and you have this long line card with all these different companies you represent, that's as a manufacturer, that's where it's critical to build a community of these raving fans. Imagine having a distributor who you would define as a raving fan. I mean, you know, they're going to go out on Monday morning and they're going to pound the pavement on your behalf versus the company who's out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that is exactly what my husband does. He builds a very high-end hunting cushion. It's the most expensive hunting cushion on the market. And he has distributors that go out and tell other distributors that they need to carry his products because of the way he's built that community.
Sarah, I know you did a bunch of research that was put together. Talk about that process and what else did you learn from that?
So this time last year is when I was first sort of this idea about writing a book around community and loyalty. I didn't have the name yet. It was starting to swirl around. And so I started doing research. I was one of those kids in college that loved a good research paper. So I attacked it like I would attack any other good research paper. Started reading books about on companies that had what I considered fiercely loyal communities. Great book by Four Seasons. They have an internal community that's just outrageous. And so I was reading that. I read Tribal Leadership. I read all kinds of books on that. I also pulled apart all the communities that I've built. I've been building communities for over 20 years. I never really looked at it that way. It's just an innate way. Has always been my innate way of doing business. So I started pulling all those communities apart, and then I started looking at other communities that I thought really had it going on. They really got it. And so I pulled all of those communities apart. I started listing all the qualities I could find that these communities had. Then I started cross-referencing. Who's got this one? Who's got that one? And I narrowed it down to the 9 qualities that are in my model that all of these communities share. And I looked at how they built their community, sort of the journey, the progression. And I was astonished to find that, lo and behold, they all have this similarity. So much of what they do is different, but this core piece is present in all of the communities that I looked at.
Sarah, at the top of the hour, we talked about that there's a lot of material out there about building community. I was struck by the notion of unlocking DNA. Speak to that a little bit. My first interpretation of that is that it's a natural thing for us to do as a human, as an organization, is to foster and build networks and communities around us. Is that what you're getting at with DNA, or speak more about that?
Actually, the DNA that I'm speaking of is the DNA that is inside the communities that I was just talking about. Looking at that DNA that they all share, and then using that DNA, putting that DNA in place in your organization. So unlocking the DNA that other people are already using, successful communities are already using, looking at all the different components, how it comes together, and then putting all of that in place at the center of your community, the center of your business.
Got it. Okay. Sarah, the bulk of the audience of this show are startups, they're entrepreneurs, they're individuals who run probably a small to medium-sized enterprise. Mm-hmm. And so let's just say as a result of listening to this conversation, they say, okay, I get it now. I see the value in this, and I recognize that it's something that I've always been trying to do, but wasn't doing it effectively. I'm ready to begin to figure this out. What would you share with them as maybe the first or second to do on beginning to get a handle on building a community of fiercely loyal fans?
The very first question I ask all of my clients, and I will share this with your audience gladly, is why do you want a community? why do you want a fiercely loyal community? Going back to something you said earlier, often the first answer I get is because my boss says I need to have one. I'm like, well, that's great, but we can't build a community on that.
Right.
You've got to be crystal clear on why you want a community and what you want that community to do, because it will dictate every step in the rest of your strategy. So if you're listening to this, spend some time chewing on that. Why do you want a community?
And I, in my experience, Sarah, a lot of organizations, they can't answer that, which is the problem in the first place.
Yes.
And why they're unable to do it. Because I think if you know the answer to that question, and if you know the why, I don't mean to get all Simon Sinek on us, but if you understand your why, well, quite honestly, I think, maybe you might disagree with me on this, but I think if you know that and you're out there talking about why you do what you do, I think your community almost builds naturally.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. But when a company has decided that this is what they want, they actually want to have a formal community as a part of their marketing strategy. A lot of communities that are out there that don't know what they are. Like, companies have started them and they don't really know what they want it to do. Other than what they may say is, well, I just want to sell the community stuff. I'm like, well, that's not going to really work. Because right. They'll know that and they'll leave. And I agree with you. I think that knowing the why part about any aspect of your business is you know, the primary question any business owner has to know. So you've got the why of your business, but what's the why? Why do you want a community? Why is that an important element for your business growth?
Yeah.
Why do you want it?
Yep, you're right. Those are two separate questions, but they're related. Sarah,
they are absolutely related.
I hate to say it, but we're running out of time for today.
Oh, no!
But I've decided that you and I must get together again when you're back in Atlanta and continue this conversation, and we'll do it in the studio.
Would love that.
Before I let you go, Sarah, how can people get in touch with you, and where can they get their hands on Fierce Loyalty, Unlocking the DNA of Wildly Successful Communities?
They can simply go to the book's website, which is fiercelojaltybook.com, and they'll see all the links for the book there. And they can get in touch with me on that site, or they can email me. My email address is Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at fierce-loyalty.com.
Sarah Robinson, business strategist and author of the new book, Fierce Loyalty, Unlocking the DNA of Wildly Successful Communities. It was really great to spend some time with you today. Thanks for joining
Loved
me.
Loved it, Todd. Thank you.
All right. Well, that wraps this show. On behalf of today's guest, Sarah Robinson, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Intrepid Radio.